did we win or what? He shouldn't do that. He's going to give us all heart failure.
Just fabulous. I'm ecstatic about it all. I don't know what to really say. You know, 3 wins from 3 is unbelievable considering you got first top 10 for one of the races. And having to start 10th and come through and win one of them, it's just been absolutely fantastic. Yeah, it's just been great. And to win the championship is fantastic.
You know, everything just came together for us, and that's really the truth. There was nothing special. We just tweaked on it, didn't make any big changes, just a slight little change here and there, play with the air pressures a little bit, you know, ran it down the bottom of the fuel barrel and just tried to perfect my line as best I could, and just it all came together for us.
Good Sports, Triple FFM, let's go racing.
Around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Hi, I'm Peter Norton.
I'm Colin Ford.
I'm Craig Revell. Thanks for joining us once again on Inside Motorsport.
Well, today was the final round of the Konica Series at Malala, and 3 out of 3 for Simon Will. Simon, you must be pretty pleased with that result.
Oh, yeah, it's just fabulous. I'm ecstatic about it all. I don't know what to really say. You know, 3 wins from 3 is unbelievable considering you got first top 10 for one of the races, and having to start 10th and come through and win one of them, it's just been absolutely fantastic. Yeah, it's just been great, and to win the championship is fantastic.
Of course, as you say, the 3 wins does give you the championship, and by what was a fairly close margin after the first race, it certainly stretched it out so that you won by a good margin by the end.
Yeah, it was a little unfortunate because myself and Paul Dumbrell, Paul Garn for the championship as well, we tangled up in the second corner and it put him out of the race. You know, it was just a little bit of rubbing, and it's one of those racing things where you both don't want to give an inch really, and whoever got in front really was going to win the championship. And fortunately for me, I came out on top, and unfortunately for him, he couldn't continue on.
Now, this year you've had the ups and the downs, but it seems like that definitely you're on the up and up.
Yeah, well, we've had a bit of a problem in the middle of the year where I had a big crash after the first race, just going into the second race, and it put me out for a couple of races on that day, and it really hurt me in the championship. I went from leading it quite comfortably to about third or fourth in the championship, and we've slowly been pegging back, and yeah, it's all just come together really well, and it might have looked easy on the outside, but it certainly wasn't, but it's been fantastic.
Now, from here, do you have something lined up for the endurance races with the V8?
Yes, yeah, I'm running with John Bell and Cat Team, and we've done a couple of tests, and we're pretty even on pace, and I think we're looking pretty good for those. It's good to have a couple of teammates who are very similar, and I like the car, how he likes it, and I think we're going to get a couple of really good results.
Now, having won the Konica Championship this year, of course, you're then going to look forward to it. What do you do next year to follow on?
I'm trying hard, and I want to get into the main series. So, if that can happen, I really want to be there. But I'll be pushing hard for it, and we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Now, obvious enough, you'd probably be getting ready to celebrate with all the guys in the team.
Yeah, well, everyone sort of went into the beers now, so yeah, I'm starting to miss out, but yeah, it's been fantastic, and can't wait for a great night ahead.
Because you can't get things get too out of hand, because a couple of weeks' time, as you say, you're back up with John Bow for the Queensland 500.
Yeah, sure. Well, today's gone really good, so I think we deserve one night off, I think.
Well, Simon, congratulations on both the race wins and the championship today at Malala. And we'll no doubt try and catch up when you're at the Queensland 500 with John Bauer.
Yeah, we'll do. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
The CART FedEx Champ Car Series is off to mid-Ohio. Gildy Foren and his team, the Marlboro Penske Racing Team, have had tremendous success at the venue.
And for the last 12 months, we managed not to mess it up. Quite the contrary, you know, just making small incremental gains, you know, from a mechanical standpoint, from an aerodynamic standpoint, from a setup standpoint, just keep just little baby steps, but most of them forward. So I think, you know, if you look at our car today, there's no, oh, okay, there's that piece over there that makes the thing goes like hell. It's just lots of little things.
DeFerrin's teammate, Helio Castroneves, qualified second. He was upset late in qualifying by traffic, which prevented him from catching DeFerrin's pole charge. Last year, Castroneves started second. He wound up winning the race.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, unfortunately, that's what I'm going to say, the game, you know. And unfortunately, I spun and I have to pay a penalty in the middle of the session. So, and I guess that's what happened, you know. But no worries. Like everybody's saying, I mean, last year I started in the same position. I know I have a very strong car, very good car, and I hope we get the same result in the race now.
Patrick Carpentier is still finding great form late in the season. He qualified third after having problems with his primary car in the morning practice session.
Yeah, very happy. You know, surprising because we didn't run a lot today, but the guys did a lot of work, worked really hard, got the main car back, and it was in perfect shape, so the car was great, and it always helps.
It's expected that Kenny Brack and the whole Ray Hall Letterman team will have a good run at what is their home circuit, the Ohio Road Course, one of the best road courses in the United States, and normally always provides some exciting racing. But
well, as we mentioned earlier on when we were interviewing Simon Wills, today saw the final round of the Konica Series taking place at Malala. And joining us now is our man on the scene at Malala, David Langfield. Dave, good day's racing there at Malala?
Certainly was. Rather interesting day, particularly as the title was decided here at Malala today in favour, as you said before, of Simon Wills. Simon put on a crushing performance today, taking out all three race wins, which put him in an absolutely unbeatable lead in the championship from Paul Dumbrell, David Parsons, Owen Kelly, Liam Ferrier in fifth, and Canberra's Dale Breed finishing in sixth position in the championship. Breed actually had a good day, finishing third overall for the in the points for the day's three races. Day started off looking very, very overcast and grey. It was foggy on the way out to the track, and we were looking at a complete contrast of yesterday's. And this would have actually played havoc with Wills' setup performance, because yesterday in the poll conference, he made mention that they tested here last week in a cooler situation, because obviously this being Brana's home test track, they'd got some data in the cooler weather, and yesterday the pole position was set in a sort of 20 degrees of heat, and he said that it really made it hard to get a good balance on the car. And again today we're back again to cooler weather, so it would have played havoc with their setup.
Mm. One of those things that you know, you plan for something, and of course the weather throws a spanner in the works.
Yeah, well, it sort of rained it for race two. Race one was decided in the dry, so where they held off. Race two, we had some rain in one of the support races before that, and they actually gave the V8s for the reverse grid race about a 10-minute familiarisation session in the wet to see if it was. Obviously, they make the decision themselves as to whether they wanted to go on wet tyres or not. Most of them electing, I will believe all of them actually electing to start on the dry tyres, as the track was virtually dry in places and certainly would have been chewing up wet weather tyres within probably about two or three laps, so not a viable option there.
Mm. Now, of course, the Konica series of late has been a scene of a few people crashing and bashing. Was there anything similar today at Malala, or were they behaving themselves?
Oh, fairly well behaved. You're actually dropping out. I'm not hearing you too well there. Today was fairly clean racing. One or two incidents, but nothing of any huge note. One interesting thing that we've got mid-morning, I think about 10 o'clock, no real surprise, but a bit of a shock nonetheless. Mark Noski's entry was withdrawn without even starting today's event. just too many doubts over the arm there as the stamina. And this is a question I was actually going to raise to Craig this morning if we go around to it. There is a question mark, obviously, over the stamina there with Mark's arm and Mark himself or the team electing not to actually start him in the race.
But obviously they were involved in the practice yesterday.
Well, Mark did well, actually. He turned in some good laps. That car is immaculately presented and is probably destined, you know, to go virtually into level one, the V8, the supercar series, as soon as it can. It is immaculately presented. Their workshop garage had the sort of suspended light situation in the over the car. The whole setup there, again, as the entire Prancing Horse stable, as we've come to know, is an extremely professionally run outfit. And they managed, I think it was a 10th position in qualifying yesterday for Mark's entry there.
Now, obviously, for them, I suppose the thing they'll have to look at is how his arm's going to heal up in the meantime and, you know, potentially putting Craig Baird in the car in the meantime.
Well, it was a suggestion, as you and I spoke about during the week. Obviously, Mark felt keen enough to get in here and get some laps under his belt. And that car... It sounded audibly louder than all the other cars, but they didn't get pinged by the noise meter, but it really sounds a powerful car, very well put together, and Mark obviously was probably keen to get in there and get some laps where he can compare himself with other cars in the competition.
I suppose Sonny better check the scrutineers out to make sure they haven't snuck the V12 Ferrari engine under the bonnet of the Falcon.
highly likely, also with perhaps the sequential gearbox arrangement on the steering wheel as well.
But there's some other racing going on there today as well at Malalar, particularly in terms of the open wheeler categories. And the Formula Holdens were at it again down there at Malalar.
Well, Formula Holdens was, I must admit, a fairly one-sided affair. Not the hugest entertainment, but good nonetheless. Rick Kelly in the Holden Young Lions entry there, or paying a partial Barana racing entry as well. So again, the advantage of the home track there. He dominated the event, taking pole position, two wins and two fastest laps. So virtually the day belonged to Rick Kelly. We had a bit of a problem there in race two, where a safety car incident was required about probably two-thirds of the way through the race, so they couldn't red flag it, so they had to be under safety car and continued, whereby Roger Oakeshott went off in turn three and actually got himself beached, and they had to deploy the safety car there, and that bunched everything up. But at the end of the day, Kelly just storming away at the restart and taking a comfortable win. Christian Murchison put in a good effort to come second in race one, and then promptly had the misfortune to have his gearbox fail on him on the start for race two on the front row of the grid, which perhaps saw him see out the session, and he wasn't particularly happy about that, but still managed to net third overall in the placings for the day. So a fairly mixed bag of results there, with Kelly, Murchison and Alan Gurr in the first race, the first top three, and the second race, Kelly, Gurr and Barana's other, or Malcolm Ramsey's son there, Brenton Ramsey, taking up to third place in that. But overall, Murchison managing to grab third through his consistency.
Now, one of the things we saw at the last round of the Formula Holdens at Oran Park was a fairly skinny grid of only seven cars. How many cars were actually able to make it to Malalar?
We actually had a dozen starting there, so that's a step in the right direction. I don't know how many of the Barana boys came over for your round at Oran Park, but obviously... Sorry?
Yeah, only seven cars started at Oran Park, so...
Seven cars, sorry, you're fading again. Seven cars, well, we'll say I think Barana put in two here, because I don't think Brenton Ramsey goes in stakes. I think he only does the Clipsal here as the other support to the major V8 series. But Hocking Racing put in three, actually, I think, with Murchison, Emerson Newton-John, and I think Chris Hocking actually driving the car himself there.
Right.
But a better grid, but you're right, it's fairly depleted.
Now, of course, the other grid that was running there in the open wheels was the Formula Ford Championship, and that's been a fairly fiercely fought championship with a number of different winners. And what was the situation for the Formula Ford guys today?
Well, again, a bit of a two-horse race there between the two major title protagonists, Will Power and Will Davison. Davison starting off pole and Power off position two for the first race, with that reversed for the actual... Davison and Power, that continuing. Power losing his nose cone late in the race, touching the back of Davison into turn seven in a fairly cut and thrust affair there, but it all seemed fairly, you know, quite fair in the way they were driving. Race two, again from the pole there, Davison and Power in second. the result, you know, finishing order of race one. And the positions at the end were reversed. Air Power actually coming through to take the win from Will Davison. So those two wouldn't have made much difference in the championship points. They were first and the second each. Minor placings in race one, Robbie Henderson third, Nick Eglin fourth, and Daniel Elliott fifth. And race two saw Jamie Wincup, Stuart Castera, and Andrew Jones in race two, rounding up the top five. Jones had a bit of a shocker in race one. He had a pit stop and had dropped back well down the field when he rejoined several laps later.
Right. Now, obviously enough, there's always something extra running in addition to the main act there. What did you have in the way of support categories at Malawa?
We had the HQ Holdens, which are pretty well the mainstay of South Australian club racing here, one of the very popular classes. Dave Lyons, actually the local regular series champion, putting a fairly dominant performance there. But that's a fair old biff and barge. Last night we actually had a couple of cars coming together, and one of them nearly being written off. We were ready to throw the shell in the bin, and actually cutting the whole front end off the car and replacing it for this morning. And he was lucky enough to get back into the race, which was Mike Smith, one of the local guys. The other support act was the CSA Saloon Cars, which made their debut at the Clipsal 500 last year for the first time. That was dominated by local driver and HQ graduate, and I think a champion from about 2 years ago, Bruce Heinrich, who actually in a Ford Falcon EA from Anthony Evangelo, who's I think Victoria and is doing very well in the championship. Kevin Weeks picked up a good result as well. He's one of the local guys in the first of the Commodore races. But Bruce Heinrich, very strong in that category. He actually builds some of the cars here, the Falcons, EA and EB Falcons for the other competitors. So his knowledge of that class is extremely good. And, of course, Bruce has done umpteen laps. He can probably do laps of Malala in his sleep, having come through the HQ and actually won an HQ title a couple of years back. So no surprises there that he took out, I think, all of the, I think, about three or four of the races there dominating that series.
Mm. A case where the local boys do come good with their local track knowledge.
Well, that's right. As I say, these come through what is the mainstay of club racing here, the HQs. Good to see that field, actually. The CSA Saloon Cars with something like about 21 cars, so that was quite well contested. It has been a little quiet of late. I don't know what it's doing interstate. And the HQs fields of up to 25, 26 cars. And it keeps the crowd entertained. They are good cut and thrust stuff, and it's good grassroots racing.
Mm. Just returning, if we can, briefly back to the Formula Holden, so we'll probably have you merely scrabbling there for your results and results.
Mm-hmm.
Hang
on.
Canberra driver Terry Clearahan, one of the competitors normally involved in Formula Holden, just wondering how he went there at the last day.
Yeah, not too well, to be honest. Qualified all right. I think he qualified seventh, as I mentioned to Craig either last night or this morning. Seventh for race one, in not a too shabby a time either. He wasn't the slowest, 1:05.9, which is only 3 seconds behind Kelly, which is a fair effort in a Silver Star entry. Race one, not classified, only completed 9 of the 18 laps there. Bit hard to say with my role. It's pretty hard to go and find out where these drivers, what they've retired from. So you might have to ask him yourself, I'm afraid. But yeah, not a particularly good result. So he's 10th overall, but not classified. Not having completed enough laps. Race two. Where is he? Clearing team. Completed that one. 7th position. 18 of the 19 laps. So he was lapped, but at least put in a finish there. I know he didn't win the Silver Star event for the day. I think that was 74 Hocking. I think he won with recording at the end. So unfortunately, local Canberra boy not doing the best today. But whether that was mechanical gremlins,
I'd say very likely if he stopped after 9 of 18, that something mechanical has definitely gone.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. He was motoring very slowly. I think he might have actually been into the pits at one stage and just rejoined and circulated. But obviously, as I say, Claire, 9 laps out of 18 is insufficient to be quite classified as a finisher.
Okay. Well, Dave, thanks very much for joining us today from Malala, and no doubt we'll be in contact again in the near future as other races come up.
No problems. A good good crowd today, healthy crowd here. The official crowd figure's not not publicised. The weather this morning would have put a few people off, but yeah, a good turnout in the end of the day because it turned out to be good weather. So we have probably have to be happy with it, and we'll catch you next time.
No worries. Thanks very much, Dave Langfield.
Thank you.
Dave Langfield reporting there from Malala. Well, Brenton Ramsey had his first appearance in, well, almost 12 months out in the Formula Holden category. And Brenton, the first place in race two, a highlight for you on the day.
Yeah, it was a pretty good run, actually, in race two. I was actually running in third in race one, and then, of all things, a problem with the brakes meant the pedal went to the floor, and I ended up spearing off into the sand trap at about 200 kilometres an hour, which is not exactly the thing you want to do. But rear of the grid start for race two, and then made my way through up into third, so that was quite a pleasing result.
Well, of course, Rick Kelly had wrapped up the championship the meeting before this. Where to now for Formula Holden?
Well, we're off to Winton after this for our last round of the championship. If you look at the point scores now, Rick's obviously taken the championship. He's well ahead on 265 points. And then Murchison and Alan Gurr now look like they're going to have a bit of a tussle for second in the Gold Star Championship. Murchison's currently on 132 and Gurr's on 107. So those guys will be tussling at Winton. And we've also got Paul Stokel joining Formula Holden at Winton as well for a bit of a cameo. And he'll be driving the third Barana car, the car that's actually Rick Kelly's spare car. So all eyes will be on Winton for what is looking to be a very good event. And obviously increased numbers in Formula Holden and a good turnout today as well.
I know that you were in for a bit of a cameo, as you put it. And also, I heard rumours that Tim Lay was also planning to make a bit of a cameo as well.
Yeah, well, we've actually got... I can't say whether it's Tim Lay or not. I think that's up to the Murphy Motorsport team, because what they've done is they've actually gone and purchased another car. It used to be run by Steve Kelly, and a very nice car, and they'll be looking to either put a young charger in that they've got in mind for next year. And if that doesn't come off, then I think there's probably every likelihood that Tim Lay would probably drive the car, and that will be another front runner to put on a really good show, I think.
Well, Brenton, thanks for your time. Congratulations. I guess you were pretty happy to jump back in the driver's seat.
Oh, it was fantastic. I mean, you've got to understand that driving cars like this is just is awesome. I mean, you can't get anything quicker than this in Australia, and it was a great buzz to be in the car. I have to admit that the spearing off with no brakes wasn't so, it was plenty exciting, but it wasn't what I had in mind. But race two was great, and I really enjoyed being back behind the wheel, and Winton will be fantastic.
Well, we look forward to having a chat to you before Winton. We go now to the man who, has really put everything in front of him. Rick Kelly, congratulations. Once again, victory in the Formula Holdens. And as Brenton Ramsey was just telling us, with a number of cameos coming up, it sounds like the second half of the season might even be tougher than the first half.
Yeah, it certainly does. I mean, the next race is certainly going to be tough with a few of the old champions coming back to give me a bit of a hurry up at the last round at Winton, so I'm sure it'll be interesting.
At this stage, Rick, you've basically secured the championship, so realistically now it's just a matter of you have to set a few records.
And Rick obviously can't hear us quite clearly there, but Rick... how many of the records are you planning on breaking before you finish your season?
As many as I possibly can. I mean, now that the championship's sewn up, I'm just going to be out there to do what I can and secure as many wins as I can at Winton.
For yourself, the long distance races now are obviously a goal, and only 2 weeks away till you jump in the car at Queensland.
Yeah, I've been training heavily for the race at Queensland with Nathan Pretty. We get along really well, and the team's been... so far, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Now, in terms of the run there with Nathan, it is probably a big step up, because the thing is, too, you're following in the footsteps of your older brother.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. Todd's there to give me a help out throughout the race meeting, I guess, and it's good to be in the same team as him, and hopefully he can help me out and see what we can do on the weekend.
In terms of the Formula Holden Championship, is it the stage now where that, having achieved what you have with that, you've got to look now where you go next year?
I guess I'll just take whatever I can get. I'm sure HRT will look after me and try and put me in, and I'll be certainly pushing my way in and seeing if I can get a V8 drive next year.
Of course, the way it is with the number of available seats, it's probably going to make it quite difficult.
Yeah, that's right. With the franchise system, it does make it difficult to get a few new blokes in, but I'm sure a few of the older guys will be heading out of the category soon, so it should create a few openings for our Sanger people.
Something like the Konica series for next year?
I'm not too sure. I don't think so at this stage. I think we'll probably just concentrate on having our best go at getting a V8 supercar drive somewhere in the Young Lions outfit, or I guess I'll have to wait and see what happens.
Thanks for joining us this evening on Inside Motorsport, and we'll try and catch up with you in a few weeks' time when you're at Winton.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Rick Kelly joining us there on the line from Malalar, and well, what a job he's done this season. After the break, we've still got a lot coming up, Colin.
That's right. After the break, we've got Murray Walker talking about the highs and lows of Formula One, and
Jim Richards, Mark Noski, and it's all still to come on Inside Motorsport.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
This is the National Racing Service on the Good Sports 103.9. Keep in touch with Q Racing by calling 6299 2398. Stay in touch with the National Racing Service on Triple S FM. Triple S FM member the Adaminami Jockey Club, home of the Adaminami Cup. Triple S FM, providing you with the National Racing Service. Triple S member the Maria Jockey Club invites you to join them at the coast.
And it's like an echo, isn't it?
The National Racing Service on Triple S FM, keeping you in touch with Triple S member the Canberra Greyhound Racing Club.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
Oh, of course, there's other racing going on around the world, and of course there's all sorts of things happening. One of the interesting parts of this season is, of course, the F1 silly season occurring in the middle of the season this year, with Heinz Harald Frentzen being given the chop by Jordan. He now moved across to the Prost team, and Jean Alesi has moved from Prost across to Jordan. Alesi's had his first run in the Jordan and sort of apparently enjoyed himself. In the meantime, Heinz Harald Frentzen has also had his first run with the Prost Grand Prix team at Magny-Cours on Friday, and he's apparently saying to people, give him time to get accustomed to the car and to the team. So I'd say it's going to be interesting to see what happens when those two drivers get out on the track for the first time. As well, this weekend there is a DTM round at Lausitz, and there it's the Warsteiner Mercedes driver, Uwe Alzen, is taking his first ever DTM pole position. And what was a qualifying game of chicken, because it was a wet track, and the session started on a soaking track, but no more rain fell throughout the session, so it boiled down to who had the nerve to wait the longest to bolt on the slicks and set the time. Audi apparently shot its bolt early on when all four of its drivers surprisingly refused to switch from wet, so the game of pass the pole in the dying minutes boiled down to a holy Mercedes and Opel's affair. As it was in the last 4 minutes of the session, the pole changed hands 9 times. And as it was Uwe Alzen in the Mercedes, Warsteiner Mercedes, who came out on top from Marcel Fassler, another Mercedes, then Alain Menu, probably his best showing of the season so far for Opel, he's in third, then Bernd Schneider, who's basically got the championship pretty well set up, fourth, Thomas Jäger in another Mercedes, fifth, and Michael Bartels in sixth. First of the Audis is Matthias Ekstrom, who's down in ninth, with Laurent Aiello in 11th. As well, the British Touring Car Championship this weekend is at Croft. There's a bit of work to be done on the cars since the last round, because a few of the cars had been biffed and barged. And as it is, it's the Egg Motorsport Vauxhall pairing of Phil Bennett and James Thompson, who've shaded the two factory cars of Ivan Muller and Jason Plato. Obviously, those cars needed a fair bit of work after the last round, with Phil Bennett in the Vauxhall taking the pole for the sprint, and James Thompson taking the pole for the qualifying race. James Thompson, of course, saying what could he expect as Croft is his home circuit. And the other part as well is that Thompson, Plato and Moore are all carrying the maximum 60 kilograms success ballast, so for him to take that pole, doing well there. In addition, other international news is the fact that Sweden is going to host a race of champions.
which is a one-off event to be held in Sweden in September. Organisers have targeted British touring car champions John Clellan, Alain Menu and local hero Rickard Rydell as the main players in the event, which is aimed to emulate the highly successful rally equivalent held in the Canary Islands each winter. Other stars such as Peter Cox, Roberto Colgaccio and Jan Flash Nilsson are scheduled to compete, while former Formula One star turned sports car ace Stefan Johansson is also being lined up for a place on the starting grid. Volvo's display a grouping of identical 265 horsepower turbocharged S60 racing saloons for the race. And Menu reckons it's going to be great to get in there again with his old mates, Rickard Rydell and John Clellan. He looks particularly forward to the verbal sparring with the one-liner man himself, John Clellan. So that's going to take place at Nutstorp on September 2nd and being the penultimate round of the Swedish Touring Car Championship.
Now, we should talk about the, well, the results of the financial investigation into the failed GMC 400 because, well, as we have probably told you ad nauseum, it did not go well.
Well, that's right. The results from this year's GMC 400 here in Canberra, which have been released during the week, it was a $1.45 million loss. From a bumper return of 58,540 people at last year's race, ticket sales fell to 39,082. And
now, hold on. They said the ticket sales were down 20,000 over the weekend, and they sprouted a figure of 80,000 across the weekend.
I think that's
3-day passes.
I think this is the thing of they have the thing of attendances and ticket sales. Attendances can be one thing, ticket sales another. But basically, they say that the ACG economy reaped $11.2 million this year from the race compared to $13.2 million last year. And the one-day ticket sales for race day plunged dramatically down from 46,182 to 26,977.
I am surprised it's not blacked out in Canberra on Channel 10, but more surprising is who paid $50?
The other part being, of course, that the opposition has said that given the downturn in the patronage, this has certainly got to threaten the future of the event. The other interesting part which came out was the fact that the Avesco fee, as we'd heard, had increased from $750,000 up to $850,000. The old story that, of course, each year the price goes up and up, and but the ACT, Canberra Tourism Events Corporation, say that basically the competitive pressure from the Sydney Olympics, that was about a year ago, and you know, the weather are the key two things that would have affected it.
You would have thought that the Olympics having been on 3 months after the last year's event, that that would have hurt last year's event more than this year's event.
Well, that's true, but, you know, we're looking for excuses, aren't we?
Common sense doesn't always prevail, but an interesting report there. And, of course, next weekend you will be heading up to Sydney for Eastern Creek's round of the Pro Car Series where, well, Rick Bates will be back into the driver's seat after his disappointing run last meeting and, well, last weekend down at Tasmanian Rally.
And
Safari, I'll get it out in a minute.
That's right. I think as well his brother as well is hopping into a car, so it's going to be Bates and everybody else. But, of course, as always, Pro Car produces great racing and there's lots of great drivers in that championship.
Last weekend, the American Le Mans Series took the track once again. Thanks to the American Le Mans radio web, here's the closing stages.
Jan Magnussen at the moment has half a lap and it seems half the field ahead of him to pick his way through, barring something very bizarre. He's got this one won because two GT cars between him and Emmanuel Pirro will seal the victory for David Brabham and Jan Magnussen. Jan Magnussen on the start finish line. It will not be a record, a McLaren record beating for the more than 14 victories. A big lot of it as he goes across the line and he only just makes it because the start finish line is a lot further up than where Jan Magnussen was. The margin of victory, 0.3 of a second. Jan supremely confident as he locked up. I cannot believe he did that. I think he thought he crossed the finish line in front of our commentary box and It was very, very close indeed.
John Hindhoff, once again, you said to us earlier in the season, they just, whoever was writing the scripts for the series needs to be paid more. They put on an Academy Award winning performance last weekend.
Addy's magnificent record of dominance comes to an end. It was 14 straight victories in the American and European Le Mans series, including Le Mans as well. They will not challenge that record set in the Can-Am days by McLaren of 17 straight victories. However, it's Pinos who've done them again, and Jan Magnussen across the line. David Brabham, absolutely ecstatic, is standing jigging on the inside pit wall.
Oh, did we win or what? He shouldn't do that. He's going to give us all heart failure. Oh, fantastic for the team. I mean, unbelievable, really is. I'm lost for words. I mean, Jan did a great job there at the end holding him off. You know, we've been struggling all year. We've come here with a bit of a boost from Sears Point. And we've come here, we've taken it by our two hands, we've gone for it, and fantastic for the team, fantastic for Michelin as well. I've got to thank Sensomatic as well for the support for me as well, and to get a win is great.
Very, very popular victories for the Pinos team, and the day really does belong to them.
So, great race. David did a fantastic job in the beginning. When I got the car, we were late enough to change the tyres when I got in, so it was a little bit slippery and it was very difficult to not use all our fuel, so that yellow came at a very good time because I was trying to save fuel and it was going, not as fast as I hoped, but the yellow came and it was great. I mean, I have to thank everybody, especially Michelin, but all the guys at Panos. This is our race.
It's been an absolutely awesome Grand Prix of Portland for the American Le Mans series. Well done to Pinos. Split loyalties. I have to say, bad luck to Tom Christensen and Emmanuel Perrault because...
We tried hard until the very, very last moment. And if you come at the end so close that you can do it, it's clear that you're disappointed. But I have to say that people from Pinos did an excellent job. The drivers have been going very quickly and constantly. They did nothing wrong. They did everything perfect. We tried to catch up, at the end we didn't do it. Congratulations to them. We will try harder and we will try it the next time.
Tom Christensen and Renato Capello, because it was a good fight, a good race. It just means that our two back-to-back races in a couple of weeks' time when we go to Mosport and then to Mid-Ohio are going to be even more exciting, if that's possible.
Yes, well, things are definitely going exciting. Don Pinos having announced during the week that he will not be selling the winning car. It's going into his personal collection. He wants to handle that one because it's the car that has broken the Audi domination. So, obviously, Don's got some spare space around the workshop or around his business enterprise, probably going to one of his car showrooms. But as well, the word this week that in Washington, D.C., they have signed up a 10-year deal to host a round of the American Le Mans Series. The American Le Mans Series will head to Washington, D.C. next year after series organisers and city officials announced a 10-year deal to stage the race in the U.S. Capitol from 2002. The Grand Prix of Washington will be held on a 1.7-mile temporary road racing circuit in the Robert F. Kennedy Memorial Stadium on July 1921 next year. The mayor of Washington has said that professional racing showcases some of the world's greatest cities, Melbourne, Monte Carlo, Barcelona and Montreal, and he's proud that Washington D.C. is a member of that group. We're an ideal city where racing enthusiasts can spend the weekend. The showpiece event of the weekend will be the 3-hour ALMS race held on the Sunday, but details of the whole support package have yet to be announced. So things looking up and up for the American Le Mans Series.
Well, you might wonder what race car drivers do on their weekends off. Jim Richards was in Canberra this weekend to support a very special charity, the Canteen Charity. And Jim, this isn't the first time that you've been involved in this project, the Canteen Ride of Your Life weekend with the Porsche Club of Canberra, and it has now become really a regular event on your schedule.
Yes, it is, Craig. I mean, I think I've done it for the last 3 years, I think, and now I make it a regular spot now. I mean, the Porsche Club of Canberra supported, and my sponsors, OAMPS, also supported. So it's an ideal, I suppose, thing for someone like myself to do. You know, the look on the kids' faces and the enjoyment that it gives them is well worth the trip to Canberra, I can assure you.
I would imagine that for a lot of the kids,
getting strapped into the car and having you hanging around the track is something that they will be able to talk about for the next, 12, 18 months.
Well, yeah, I mean, the good thing about it is that a lot of the kids that were there last year and the year before are there and still enjoying it and still having just as much fun, and it's just great to come back each year and give them a bit of a thrill.
And it's probably just as good for everyone to see them keep coming back because it shows that the programs are working.
Exactly right. Terrific.
Of course, for yourself, it's a busy day, a busy time for yourself. You come to Canberra for a charity event, but the next three weekends certainly aren't charities.
No, they're not. No, we've got Eastern Creek this coming weekend and the Nations Cup with the Porsche, and then the weekend after we've got the Queensland 500. So, that's going to keep us fairly busy and it's good as well.
For the Nations Cup event, Eastern Creek with a 1 kilometre long main straightaway, the Porsches aren't going to, really see a few of these other cars for dust.
No, they're not. It's a crying shame because, the way the regulations were last year, all the cars are very, very equal. And, they've made the Porsches stay like they are, you might say, and they've given the Vipers and the Lambos and the Ferraris extra freedoms, which isn't right, but all we can do is just sort of, keep doing the best we can and seeing what happens.
A racing driver like yourself who does enjoy racing so many different types of car must be happy to see that Pro Car are able to stand up on their own two feet and doing well promoting a separate series to V8 racing.
Yes, well, it is good, and I suppose you could say the series that they are promoting within their own right are turning out to be fine. I mean, we're getting some reasonable spectators, but it would just be nice if they get the regulations right in our class.
Of course, for yourself, teaming up at the Queensland 500, have you got a driver partner yet, or are they still keeping the surprise on whether it will be with your son, Stephen?
No, it won't be with Steve. It'll be with young Dean Cantor.
And that, you would have had an opportunity to meet up with him a few times now. How do you find his driving style as compared to yours? Because there is a little bit of a height difference there as well.
Yes, no, Dean's going to fit no problem. He's got a spacer made for the seat, so when we do a driver change, he puts the spacer in and gets him back to the length that he needs for his feet and for his arms. But, he's a good little driver, and, hopefully we'll go quite well.
And your first time in a Ford for a few years?
No, I've been in the Ford last couple of years with John Bow, don't forget.
Okay, I've got a short memory. Can't remember what happened last weekend, let alone a year ago at the Queensland Raceway in Bathurst, but... For yourself, have you had any testing runs in the FTR car?
Yes, we have. We've had I've had a couple of outings at Phillip Island and a couple of outings at Calder, so it's good.
All right. Well, we wish you all the best for the next 3 weeks. I know everyone here in Canberra will be looking forward to getting up the road to Eastern Creek to once again see the Nations Cup and all the Pro Car categories out on the circuit, because after what they got served up at Wakefield Park, it's certainly something that's going to be a spectacle to watch.
No, that'll be great, Craig, really, really well.
Of course, this year is the final year that those of us who watch Formula One will hear Murray Walker as a commentator of the Formula One circus as it goes around the various races. In this report from Jonathan Ledger of the BBC, Murray Walker talks about the highs and lows of his time commentating with Formula One.
There is no doubt at all about who's the best qualifier in terms of numbers of pole positions and the way he achieved them, and that's Ayrton Senna. 65 pole positions. It's easy to say that's a record that I would be surprised if it was ever broken, because I used to say that about the Prost record of 51 victories, and it looks as though Schumacher is shortly going to do that. I would be very surprised, nevertheless, if anybody beat 65 pole positions of Ayrton Senna. The best racer, it's a contentious, and off the top of my head, Nigel Mansell. I had, as a broadcaster, Jonathan, and this is something that will be very close to your heart, more excitement, more drama, more highs and lows with Nigel Mansell than with all the rest of them put together.
Well, you are world champion. What is going through your mind?
I wish you wouldn't say that, Murray. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's the most amazing feeling in your life. And, you know what people have said, and I can see your eyes now. And, I mean, you know, I'm just trying, concentrating as hard as I can not to fill up. Well done.
And thank you. Nigel was always marching down the pit lane to grasp Ayrton Senna by the throat, or passing Gerhard Berger impossibly at the Peraltada in Mexico, or having a wheel nut drop off, or passing Senna in Hungary to win the race against all odds, or winning the first race he ever drove in for Ferrari when in Brazil, when it hadn't previously done more than a couple of laps without breaking down. He was a dramatic personality, and I miss him very much indeed.
What about Michael Schumacher? Just a word about him. I mean, he is on the verge of this record, equaling it with Alan Prost and surely beating it soon, and it looks as if he's going to get a fourth world championship. How highly do you rate him? How much do you like him? How much do you warm to him?
I rate Michael Schumacher very much against the odds in Britain. Very, very highly indeed. He is looked upon in this country by far too many people as an evil kraut, which he is not. He is an extremely nice person. He is gigantically professional. He's one of the greatest drivers of all time, arguably the greatest of all time. And you have to speak as you find in this world, I think. And speaking as I have found with Michael Schumacher, with me, he has always been available, gigantically helpful, extremely cheerful, totally authoritative, immensely professional, and all in a foreign language to him. Now, I admire that package enormously, and I cannot speak too highly of the man. And he has brought Ferrari, not quite from the depths, but from a pretty low position, right to the top again. And although Jean Todt and Ross Brawn and Rory Byrne and Paolo Martinelli and other top people at Ferrari have had a major hand in it, it would not have happened without Michael Schumacher. And he's a top man. When Senna crashed, having seen Gerhard Berger previously in the Ferrari not only do the same thing at the same place but burst into flames and be strapped unconscious in the car and thinking he was dead, Michele Alboreto do the same thing at the same place, having seen Nelson Piquet do the same thing at the same place, and all three of them be perfectly all right, my immediate reaction was, whoa, that was a big one. And then I realised very rapidly indeed that it was very serious. And you know, Jonathan, it's difficult when you're in that situation. You can't say, oh God, this is terrible, the man's being killed. He wouldn't anyway, but you can't say that because you don't know. Equally, you can't say, don't worry folks, the cars are very safe these days, he'll spring up in a minute and everything will be okay and they'll restart the race, because you don't know that either.
One driver to look out for next weekend at Eastern Creek Raceway is Jeff Morgan in the Monster.com Viper. He is one of many drivers that are really coming to grips with a new package and finding some extra speed and handling which wasn't perhaps there before. I caught up with Jeff Morgan and I asked him about the new package and had the Monster.com car and his chances at the upcoming event.
The aero package looks good. I don't think it's as big a deal as probably the brakes and the gearbox. They're the performance things. I mean, the wings look great. The front splitter probably helps a little bit, but we've manoeuvred the rear wing around here two or three times backwards and forwards and it hasn't made much difference. So I think it's more to do with the gearbox and the brakes.
For the Viper drivers though, those modifications were a little bit overdue.
Yeah, it took a long time to get them, and basically we were rebuilding street cars. When you look at the Ferraris, which are beautifully made, and the Porsches, which are exceptional race cars, and the Lamborghini, they're all come out of the factory as race cars, and the Viper's really a street car, and so we had to rebuild it. Every time they gave us a modification, something else would break. And it's all well and good to say, well, if we give you all these things, you should be quick, but it doesn't work like that. You know, you actually have to rebuild the whole car.
What drew you into going with the Viper and the package that the Viper had to offer?
Well, I'd raced Porsches for 12, 13 years, and I'd won four Porsche championships. We've done very well in GT production in Porsches, and when Nations Cup was mooted, Ross Palmer was very keen to get us to try and do something different, because we knew as a team we'd develop a pretty good car, as we had done in Porsche. So it was a new challenge for me, a new challenge for Barry Jones, the team manager, and you know, it's taken a lot of work and a lot of money to get here, but you know, I think the cars are now, as long as they don't, the moment we poke our heads up over the horizon, as long as they don't give us weight or something now, we can continue to develop the cars.
The track at Queensland Raceway is an interesting beast. It's not the most technical track that you would go out and drive on.
Well, people say that. I've heard people say that, and I was talking with Jimmy Richards this morning, and really, if you rush up to corners, it's not technical until you try and go too fast, and then it becomes very technical. The car's understeer off the road, the tyres stop working, there's so many things that go wrong in your car and your handling of your car that so I think at 10 tenths any circuit's very technical, and there's no question in my mind that Queensland Raceway has got the best presentation of facilities of any circuit we go to in Australia.
For yourself, Monster.com coming on board, obviously getting a good sponsor, that helps?
Yeah, it did help a lot. We were struggling there for a year. It was a sponsorship, having Vodafone moved out, and then Monster not knowing whether they would commit, but they've committed fully to us now and helped us develop the car. So, you know, the Viper is now truly a Monster.
I guess the other thing is to see more of your Viper compatriots out there challenging the weighted numbers of Ferraris and Porsches.
Yeah, well, I think Darcy Russell did well in Canberra. He came third, I think, so he got a podium finish. Unfortunately, I made a mistake and spun into the wall there. I should have been on the podium. But he's doing very well, and I think they'll continue to develop the car as we do, and Rusty French, when he comes back, I'm sure he'll do well as well.
Is it something about an American muscle car that really brings the fans to your pit bay and the people wanting to get the autographs and everything like that?
Well, having driven a Porsche for 13 years and still owning a turbo, I love the mark, but I've got to say that nothing attracts the crowds like the Viper. I mean, if you won a race in the Porsche and came second in the Viper, all the crowd would be around the Viper. They just love the muscle of the Viper, they love the sound of it and the look of it, so it just looks so horny, if you like, or very sexy and loud and all those things, and they love that.
What does it mean to you as a driver to know that you're going to the Sandown 500 and to be part of the showcase of it?
Yeah, well, we don't know if we're going to the Sandown 500 yet, because unfortunately our fuel tank is a very small one, and at this point in time the organisers have deemed that we'll be racing with standard fuel tanks, which means we won't be going, because we have to stop five times and everyone else will stop three times, so it's not even a race. So we, unless things change, we won't be going, you know.
So it feels like there's a few tete-a-tetes to be had before that.
Well, Procar have done a very good job. It's a very difficult thing to try and get parity amongst such a wide variety of different cars, and I think they've done a very good job, but they've still got some tinkling to do with different things, and that's, at this point in time, that's one of the issues we've got. And other mates have got different issues as well. We all have to be fair and very objective about it, but we'd love to race at Sandown. I've got Rick Bates lined up as my co-driver. He's as quick as anybody, and our team have always proven to be a long-distance specialist team. We've done very well. So we'd love to be in the Sandown 500, but we want to be competitive. There's no point running around to lose.
And finally, these standalone meetings have really helped secure the Procar name being a quality branch of motorsport in this country, much to the dismay of some other divisions.
Well, I commend Ross and Procar, Ross Palmer, because he's taken a big risk. It's his money. And to go alone, away from the V8s, when you've got a V8 mentality in Australia, is a very brave thing to do. And so we should all support him, which is what we've tried to do right from the beginning, and other competitors have. So I think it's great, and I commend his desire to try and get Formula 3 as a premier open-wheeler category, so we can get young Australians stepping into an international category in England or Japan, where they actually have run here locally on a international formula. So I think the Formula 3 growth is fantastic.
And obviously for yourself, you're just looking to knock over a few of these European markets before the year's out.
Yeah, well, we certainly want to do that. I'm on a bonus from Monster to win, so every time I win, I get an extra bonus, so I'm pretty keen to get on top of the podium.
Well, congratulations for what's been an interesting series so far, and wish all the best for the rest of the championship.
Well, they're all good circuits for us coming up. We've had all the bad ones. Hopefully, we might get in that top step.
One of the cars that is making its debut at the Malalar Circuit is the Big Blue Oval, sponsored by Bud. Mark Noski is the driver, and it's good to see you back after that terrible injury at the GMC 400 Nations Cup event.
Yeah, it is. It's been about 8 weeks, I think, nearly to the day since I had the accident. So it's been a pretty long 2 months. So I'm glad to be back in the car again, which is great. And being in a V8 supercar, it's made it even better.
Now, of course, your links with the Prancing Horse Racing team are not severed. This team, the Bud Racing Falcon team, is part of their major motorsport strategy.
Yeah, correct. It's the car is actually named the Bud Racing Falcon, but it's actually under the umbrella of the Prancing Horse Enterprise. So PHR have obviously branched out to V8 supercars now after successfully running the Ferraris and the Mustang in the Pro Car series. So we've crossed to the Evesco Run series now, and hopefully into bigger and better things next year.
Of course, for yourself, it's a toe in the water, but obviously, it's an opportunity to shake down the car before the big events of Queensland and also the Bathurst 1000 race.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were going to do a shakedown test during this week, but unfortunately, we had a couple of components that were late arriving at work, so we sort of bit the bullet and made this weekend our shakedown, and we turned the wheel for the first time today, and first opinions of the car is it's a very well-built car, and we've had a great day, and we're sort of certainly looking forward to doing the Enduros now with some more testing under our belts, and as I said, we'll have a crack at the Shell Series next year, and hopefully on to bigger and better things.
For yourself, healing arm, have you fully recovered, or do you have some sort of bracing on the arm to also support the bone?
No, I don't actually. I probably should be wearing a brace, but it's sort of 7 weeks since the operation now. In the first 6 weeks, the surgeon and the doctor sort of say is not to do anything, and then basically for the next 4 weeks, they sort of said to start doing the physio and rehab and that sort of thing. So I'm probably in the car a little bit ahead of schedule, but after today, the arm feels fantastic, and it's probably about 80% being correct, but I was actually a bit sceptical during the week that it wasn't going to be strong enough, but I've had no problem in the car at all, and there is a little bit of pain tonight, which we sort of expected to happen, but so far so good, it's all holding up, and I'm well on the way to recovery.
Well, I know all race fans are glad to hear that you are on the way back, and to see you back in a car, it'll be great, and a busy time for you, where you go this weekend at Malalar, next weekend up to Eastern Creek, and then, of course, the weekend after that, you'll be in Queensland. At least it's all heading in the right direction. You're not backtracking.
No, exactly. I mean, if these next 3 weeks will really test my arm, and I guess it's probably perfect timing now that there is 3 meetings in 3 weekends, and as I said, with the arm being in the next 3 weeks of its stage of healing, it's all worked out perfectly. Mm. I mean, obviously, the disappointment of doing it was missing the Queensland 500 and not the Queensland 500, the Willowbank round of the Procar series, and obviously missing the Canberra event. But anyway, the arm's healing now, and I've got the biggest grin on my face today, so it's all going good.
And of course, for yourself, teammate in the long distance races, will it be Craig Baird who so ably subbed for you in the Procar series?
Yeah, that's officially been announced that Craig will partner me in the Falcon at Queensland and Bathurst, and I mean, I'm really, really happy that Craig's on board, because our V8 program was fairly late being announced, and to have someone of his calibre joining us in our team is really a credit to the team, and obviously Craig's got a lot of knowledge of the Ford Falcon over the last sort of 12 months with Stone Brothers, so his experience will be invaluable, and hopefully with the pairing we should have a strong result up at the Queensland and Bathurst.
Well, thanks again for your time, and we wish all the best for the upcoming meetings.
Thanks very much.
Mike King joins us now from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network. And Mike, last weekend you got to enjoy the
8th running of the Brickyard 400. And Jeff Gordon, just how many can he win?
He's already won 3 of them. He's won 3 poles, and he's led 7 of 8. So, you know, very quickly, Jeff Gordon is becoming one of the masters of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and he is, when it comes to stock car racing, he is the master. So, I know there were an awful lot of fans from Indiana that were happy to see him back in victory lane. And on the other hand, there were an awful lot of fans that wanted to see other drivers in victory lane that weren't happy to see the 24 car out front. But there's no denying that he and Robbie Loomis did a masterful job of taking a race car that was less than perfect or less than good, and they made it better all day long. So they really made good use of those early caution flags in the race.
It is a fascinating race. Now, unlike the Indianapolis 500, which everyone knows the trophy, it's the BorgWarner trophy, and I know during the month of May you spoke to the people at BorgWarner about their involvement with the trophy, but for the Brickyard 400, an equally impressive trophy, but the name of the trophy is not as well known.
Now, it's the PPG trophy, and you know what's interesting about that, Craig, is PPG has basically now withdrawn their support of just about all motorsports events in the United States. And, you know, I'm not sure what their status is as far as supporting motorsports around the world, but at one time they were both the presenter of the pole award, the $100,000 PPG pole award at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the 500. They no longer do that. They no longer are one of the presenting sponsors of the kart series, and they've also withdrawn their support, basically, of the NASCAR event at the Speedway. The management has just decided they were going to go in a different direction, away from motorsports as the use of a promotional tool. So the PPG trophy had been named several years ago. Whether or not it was named as a courtesy to PPG because of their longtime involvement, I'm not sure. BorgWarner, of course, continues to support the Indianapolis 500 and continues to be a vital part of the presentation of the BorgWarner trophy. So there have been some rumors that I have heard that the cup may, you know, the NASCAR trophy may actually be renamed. And in fact, there was a rumor going around that it may be renamed the Dale Earnhardt Trophy. You know, whether you like that or not, I'm not sure. But the bottom line is there are some certainly some thoughts on that. And the trophy, Craig, that you see, the PPG trophy, the large trophy, which is on display year-round in the Hall of Fame Museum, it's very different from the trophy that the winner receives. The winner receives it's a similar version, but on top of it is one of the Culver paving block bricks from the Speedway, and it's covered in sterling silver, and so it's a very unique trophy. But we really are all wondering now what the trophy will be named next year when it's presented to the winner of the 9th Brickyard 400.
Mm. Of course, the BorgWarner Trophy, the winner of that only gets to hang on to it for about 10 minutes, and they receive
yep.
a small replica set in, well, it's a sort of a half trophy with where their face is on the trophy, which is presented to them later on once they work out how they're going to mold the face.
Yeah, you know, they actually, Craig, started in the early 90s. It used to be that the winner of the 500 would get, as you described, what looked to be a miniature half of the trophy mounted on a plaque with the position where their likeness would be highlighted. Now, starting in the early 90s, I think Rick Mears was the first one to receive it after he had won his 4th race. They received what's called a baby Borg. And if I'm not mistaken, it's a 1/5 or a 1/6 scale replica of the trophy, but it actually is it's a regular replica that will sit and can be displayed just like the BorgWarner is itself, except it's just much smaller. So the baby Borg, as it's called now, is a highly coveted item by drivers, and it's only been awarded now for the last 10 years or so. And as you mentioned, previous to that, the award had been what looked like a baby board trophy, if you would, cut in half and mounted on a plaque. But now they get the what looks like a full miniature-sized trophy.
Mm. Of course, 10 years ago this year it was when Rick Mears won his fourth race. That was, of course, 1991 when he took the Penske Marlboro, and I think it was the first year of the Penske Marlboro livery cars to Victory Lane. It was an impressive run on the day, and I remember Tom Carnegie making an analysis like we did at the beginning of this interview, saying that Rick Mears is 35 years old and he's competed at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, I think at that stage it was 15 times, but I'm certainly not Donald Davison, so I won't profess any sort of accuracy here. And, you know, AJ Foyt competed 50 times and won it four times, and this is how many you could prospect out to Rick Mears. But of course Rick Mears did retire quite early in his life, in a racing lifespan, and he is stuck on four.
Craig, I tell you, Craig, the biggest difference, of course, between Rick Mears and Jeff Gordon was the fact that, you know, Rick had been injured pretty seriously a couple of times earlier on in his career, where, you know, if you think about it, Jeff Gordon has really gone through both his open wheel and his stock car career without really suffering, knock on wood, a serious injury. He broke a few ribs last year. But, you know, other than that, Jeff Gordon has been pretty healthy throughout his career. And, you know, I've got to think that at 30 years old, that realistically, I think you can expect to see Jeff Gordon in a stock car running hard, running competitive for another 10 to 12 years. I think until he's 40, maybe 41, 42 years old, I think you'll see him running very competitively. And I have a feeling that Jeff will go ahead and win his fourth Winston Cup championship this year. And I really believe that Jeff Gordon will become NASCAR's first eight-time Winston Cup champion. And as you said, you know, before it's over and done with, he could win at the Brickyard 7-8 times, and I don't think any of us would be very surprised.
Mm. Of course, thinking back to that 91 season with Rick Mears, he stuck it in the wall pretty hard, and at one stage I think there was doubts on him even making the race.
Yeah, that's right. If I remember correctly, in 91, Rick had a problem with the engine cowling over in Turn 2. And the engine cowling, the snap buttons that they used to attach the cowling with all around, the buttons were not attached correctly, and the engine cowling flew off the rear of the car, and Rick lost all the downforce on the back of the car, and he wound up getting upside down, and made contact with the wall. His helmet, you know, scraped the track. He broke his wrist. And it was a pretty harrowing experience for Rick Mears, and that he will tell you if you talk to him that incident over there in Turn 2, you know, I have to wonder, Craig, that might have been 1992, the year after he won his fourth. It might be 1992 that happened to him over there in Turn 2, but he'll tell you that incident suddenly, you know, let him know with a lot of clarity that if he didn't watch it, he could lose his life. And you know, he had a couple of other bad ones, not necessarily at the Speedway, but during his career. And so I think it kind of magnifies the difference between the dangers that an open-wheel driver faces on a day-in and day-out basis versus the dangers that a stock car driver will face. Not to say that both professions aren't incredibly dangerous, but certainly an open-wheel driver can ill afford to make a mistake on the racetrack, more so than a stock car driver in terms of the consequences.
Mm. Well, before we go into the real race cars, there's one other event. I mentioned three Blue Ribbon events at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and, of course, coming up later this year, the second running of the Formula One Grand Prix of the United States. And this, after last year's race, I know I talked to a lot of people in the American media and a lot of other people who are in other forms of motor racing, and whilst they all had different takes on it, one interesting story was Tony George was thinking about possibly extending the track to include Turn 3 grandstands, which were not used last year because of the track not going over that side. Is there any sort of infrastructure changes like that going on?
I've heard, Craig, that there could be the possibility inside of the next few years the director of engineering at the Speedway is a gentleman named Kevin Forbes, and you know, getting everything prepared and ready for last year's SAP United States Grand Prix was such a huge challenge for Kevin and his staff. It was a little over a two-year project to get that in place. That I think the last thing Kevin wanted to talk about as soon as last year's race was over was making changes to the track. However, I have heard that there is apparently some sort of contingency plan in place to be able to extend the track if both Formula One and the Speedway deems that necessary or something they would like to do. So certainly it's not out of the question. It is something that could be done.
Mm. All right. Now, the third Blue Ribbon event is the Grand Prix. Do they have a trophy like the BorgWarner or the formerly known as PPG Cup?
No, they don't, Craig. As a matter of fact, it's interesting that you ask about that. We were talking about that over the weekend up in the booth, and there is not a designated trophy. Formula One management and the FIA actually bring the trophies or provide the trophies that are awarded to the winner. So it is unlike the other two events at the Speedway. Apparently the designation of what type of trophy is going to be awarded at the SAP United States Grand Prix is left up to the responsibility or is a mandate that is made by Formula One management and by the FIA in terms of what the design is going to look like. So until we saw the trophy that was awarded to Michael Schumacher last year, we didn't know what it was going to look like.
Tony Stewart just shows his versatility, doesn't he? He ran a Coors Light Dirt Champ Car, or Champ Car as they're, Silver Bullet Car as they're now called.
Right.
He raced in the Winston Cup race, of course, and really just doesn't mind getting down and dirty. Indeed, jumped in, of course, one of Chip Ganassi's cars and put in a sixth-place finish at the 500 this year.
Yeah, you know, he really is an incredible driver. And, you know, I've known Tony for the better part of 10 or 11 years, and, you know, it's a shame that his temper tantrums and some of the things that are happening with his career right now are getting in the way of people appreciating what he can do with a race car. He's so focused on winning races that when things don't work out, he's obviously upset. And he is truly a throwback driver. He is a driver that's out of the mold of a Mario Andretti, out of the mold of an A.J. Foyt, out of the mold of maybe a Johnny Rutherford. But, you know, it's funny because in this day and age of political correctness, when a guy gets out of a race car and is unhappy about the way the car is performed and says he's unhappy and refuses to kind of utter the NASCAR line of thanking all of his sponsors and saying what a great day he had, and he just wasn't able to catch up. He catches a lot of flack, and I think it's unfortunate. I really do, because I know Tony personally. I know that he is very concerned about the image he projects. I know that he's very concerned about the fact that people see a side of him that is not necessarily a good side. And it bothers him. But by the same token, if you take away from Tony Stewart his competitive nature, then you have taken away what makes him special. And so I think people are going to have to find a way, Craig, to deal with the Dr. Jekyll side of Tony Stewart and so they can see the Mr. Hyde side. I mean, it's kind of strange, you know. He was visibly upset after the IROC race, but he, you know, because he felt like Bobby Labonte, his teammate on the Joe Gibbs Winston Cup team, he felt like Bobby Labonte had driven him up into the wall in turn four on lap 35 of the 40 lap IROC race. Bobby Labonte admitted that he had driven Tony into the wall and that he was sorry about it.
It was a lot of fun until I slipped up there in the corner and crashed him. So, yeah, that was my fault. Shouldn't have happened, but I was trying to just get an edge on him because the rest of those guys were catching back up to us.
But Tony bit his tongue and realized that that was not the time or the place, you know, to really rail on his teammate Bobby Labonte. I respected him for that, but
I wouldn't have ran that close with anybody else. I mean, I trust Bobby more than I trust anybody. So, you know, to race anybody that close, that's the only guy I'd have done it with.
There are still some people that's not good enough. So, I don't know. As far as I'm concerned right now, he is the best race car driver, pound for pound, in the world today when it comes to the ability of a driver to hop in any type of race car and do well. He runs so many different types of race cars. He still runs a USAC Coors Light Silver Bullet Series car. He ran last Thursday night at Indianapolis Raceway Park. He still runs his dirt late model whenever he can. He still gets into a sprint car whenever he can, into a midget whenever he can. He still runs remote control race cars. He owns the World of Outlaws team that Danny Lasoski drives for. He owns the World of Outlaws, the USAC Coors Light Silver Bullet Series team that Casey Kane drives for. I mean, this is a guy who his whole life is racing. That is it. He doesn't care about putting on a suit and sitting in an office and simply pocketing a lot of dollars. He cares about racing and about putting money back into racing. And that's one reason why I respect Tony Stewart's abilities as a race car driver.
Well, and it comes down to a whole bigger issue of television and sponsorship sanitizing what is an emotional sport. And, like, what made Champions great is they had a personality. If someone wrecked them, they got out of the car. And going to that, that's what's made some of the stuff we've heard from the radio network this year from the Northern Lights series so entertaining, is because the constant battle between Eliseo Salazar, AJ Foyt, and Eddie Cheever. You, in the television package, because television is what it is, you don't get to see much of what's going on. But with the radio package that you're all putting together, we get to feel as though we're about to get into some fisticuffs.
Well, I tell you, and you're obviously referring to specifically AJ's comments after that race at Richmond. And certainly I agree with you that in when it comes to radio, we get sometimes the more raw emotions from the drivers than you get on television, because they become a little bit homogenized, if you will, when that television camera is in their face. But when they're talking to just a microphone, just a radio pit reporter or a turn guy or me or whoever else, you get what is sometimes a little more real, you know, the way they're really feeling. And, you know, AJ Foyt made no bones about it, and he said in no uncertain terms, you know, that he felt like going over and putting his fist in Eddie's face after Eddie got under Eliseo Salazar there in turn three, when the two of them were running 1-2 in the late stages of that race at Richmond. And
there's no reason for that kind of crap. Chiba's a complete goddamn idiot on the crap he pulls and dive under somebody on track like this. And I agree that we might have come down a little bit, but he's been pulling this crap all year. It's time somebody whips his shit out.
You know, he let a couple of expletives fly, but the bottom line is that's real emotion. And, well, like you said, that's what happens when you get real honest responses to situations occurring on the track. And so, you know, because of that, we do not have a delay. We do not have a 5-second or a 7-second delay button. So if what you're hearing on the radio network broadcast, you're hearing it happen as it happens. And Eddie has lost his temper a couple of times this year. We've had some interesting, candid responses to questions.
Salazar for the lead. He had older tires than I did, and he came very high out of two. I got a run on him going into three. He came down, and there was no place for me to go. It's very unfortunate.
This year, but that, as you said, is the nature of this sport. And if you change that, if you try to take that away, I think you're jipping the fans out of something that they deserve to be a part of. If they can't be at the track and experience it at the track, they should be able to experience it through the broadcast medium, which we, you know, enjoy in radio, and that's what we try to do. We try to make you feel like you're right there listening on the scanner or right there sitting at the track. So We hope to be able to continue bringing those sort of responses to the audience.
Mm. And, of course, this year we have seen, unfortunately, a couple of major accidents, which have seen a few of the drivers out of the car for quite some while, of course.
This has been a lengthy yellow. It was a three-car incident at the exit of turn number two involving Jarrett Schrader, who blew an engine, and collective Davey Hamilton and Sarah Fisher. First, let's check in on the condition of Davey Hamilton, the only driver taken to the infield care center. Kim Marsh, you got something for us?
I do. I am outside the infield care center here. We hear they're going to be taking Davey Hamilton to Parkland Hospital. He is awake and alert. He's been complaining of some pain in his legs and his feet.
The spin of the back straightaway. Sharp gets free. It is Ray and it is Cheever as they smack the outside wall in going into turn number three.
And we've got another car. It looks like Robbie McGee may have also made contact with the outside wall.
Davey was at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway over the weekend for the IROC race. It was great to see him. And, you know, when you consider what this guy has gone through, his spirits are incredible, and he wanted... It's funny, he told his wife, Tracy, he said, I want to get to the racetrack so I can feel alive again. And, you know, Craig, you deal with enough race car drivers to understand that if you take the track away from them, they begin, it's like sapping them, draining them of their lifeblood. And, you know, here Davey has just had his left foot totally reconstructed, several surgeries on his right foot as well. He's in a wheelchair. He's in obvious pain, but what does he want to do? He wants to be at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on the grid, on the IROC grid, talking to the drivers, and that's where he was. His son was sitting in his lap, and Davey looked as good as I've ever seen him in terms of mentally. Certainly, he's got a long road ahead, but I think Davey's going to be back in a race car this time next year. Scott Goodyear, I'm happy to report that his back has healed very nicely. The doctor simply did not feel like that he was ready to be back in a stock car last Saturday for the IROC finale, and that's probably the best thing. I mean, that's probably the smart move. They told him he needed another couple of weeks, and, you know, it's not like Robbie McGee, who's driving the car with a broken leg and using a brace. You know, this is a lower back injury. It was a broken vertebrae in the back, and you don't want to play around and dare a back injury to hurt you all over again. So Scott believes that he'll be doing some testing again very soon, and Scott Goodyear says that he'll be back in the car for next year's 500.
Well, I know the 500 has been a great motivational tool for a lot of race drivers in the past to get themselves healed. AJ, of course, after his Elkhart Lake accident, just was determined he was not going to miss the 500. Jim
yep.
Crawford has had accidents in the past. Of course, the very well-known Scottish driver, who I think he was Scottish. And
yep, right.
he, of course, was always using the Indy, he used the Indy 500 to come back from injury. And obviously Scott Goodyear taking a leaf out of those, and Davey Hamilton, I'm sure, would take every opportunity to get back into a 500 field.
Yeah, and it wouldn't surprise me to see Davey Hamilton make his return next year at the Indy 500. It would probably be a fitting place for him to come back, even though he was injured at Texas. The doctors seem to think that his rehab is going to take about another 6 to 8 months. And, you know, you just don't realize how close this guy came to losing both of his feet. I mean, he hit the wall outside of turn two at Texas at a very strange angle. It sheared off the front nose of his car like we've never seen happened before in one of these. He was driving, I believe, a Dallara, and I've never seen one of these Indy Racing League Cubs react the way this one did. I mean, it just sheared off the entire front. His car was spinning around when it hit the wall, and, you know, he came very close to being a double amputee, and he knows that, and they have literally rebuilt his left foot from other parts of his body. And surgical steel. So it's amazing, really, what these drivers will go through. And Dr. Kevin Scheid is the orthopedic surgeon that is overseeing Davey's all these procedures. But there's a team of like six surgeons that are doing the surgery, and it's just been amazing. And Dr. Scheid, I talked to him a few weeks ago, and he said the first thing Davey said to him was, "How long do you think it's going to be before I can drive again?" And, you know, he said that he told Davey, well, let's get you walking first. And Davey said, no, let's get me driving first. So, you know, that's pretty unbelievable. You know, when you think about it, that a guy is sitting there in a hospital bed, he's come this close to losing both of his feet, and his first thought is not, Doc, can you save my feet? Doc, will I ever be able to walk again? His first thought is, when can I get back into a race car? So, and you know, just from meeting these guys, you know that that's the way their minds work, and they are not like you and me. They are very different people in terms of the way they are put together, and the competition of being in a race car and going fast is something that they literally cannot live without. And Johnny Parsons, you know, who is our analyst on the radio network, he talks about it all the time. I mean, Johnny is in his mid-50s and is you know, sitting there looking 60 right square in the eye. He's going to be 60 in a couple of years. And he talks about how difficult it is for him to go to a racetrack and see these drivers strapping into these cars and him knowing that he's never going to have that opportunity again. And, I mean, it literally pains him to do that. And I think being a part of the broadcast is, you know, good for him. But for him to go and sit through practice sessions and qualifying sessions and all the preparation to get ready, I mean, it really hurts him to know that he's not going to be back in a race car again. And so it would be interesting to be able to spend about a week inside of one of these guys' heads just to know how they operate, because whatever it is that the speed does to them, it's an addiction. There is absolutely no denying that.
Mm. Well, so far we've spoken about everything but the racing. And this year, if I know the media in Australia, and you don't have the opportunity of arguing with media in Australia and telling them how oval track racing is racing and open wheel racing on oval tracks is real racing, because we have a road racing mentality and a sedan car, tin top mentality. And for me, all I have to do is watch one IRL race. And they go, but, you know, it's not kart. It's, you know, kart's the real racing. And you go, watch one of these things. If you're not sold by the end of one of these races, then you don't like motorsport. And this year,
well,
every race has been like that.
And we have had some great races this year. And you know, the same was true last year and the year before. And, you know, there has been some talk, Craig, there. I know there's a promoter there in Australia that has talked to Tony George several times about bringing an Indy Racing League event to Australia. And I know, and forgive me for not being able to tell you where the track is. You probably know where it is, but I know that it was a track that was either 3/4 mile or a mile in length. I know that there were several different safety measures that had to be taken in order for our cars to be able to run there. But, I mean, these were fairly serious talks that I understand had been going on. And so, you know, the possibility, I think, of the series coming to Australia exists. I think that the one thing you have to be able to do to truly convince people of how good the racing is to allow them an opportunity to see it in person. You've seen our cars run in person, so you know what it's like. But I think there's a lot of people that are not going to simply sit and watch it on television, even though I think I agree with you, if they did, I think they would see just how good the racing is. But it's the speed that you just cannot pick up on television, just how fast these drivers run and how close they run together. And, you know, when we were in Richmond, Virginia for the first time a few weeks ago, we came down out of the booth, and of course we were wearing our shirts, our Radio Network and Indy Racing League logoed shirts. And I was walking back to our truck, our production truck, and I was stopped by no less than a dozen people who told me how incredible they thought our event was at Richmond. And, you know, these are people who are stock car fans. And, you know, when you see our cars racing on tracks, I mean, we compete at speeds that are normally 40 to 45, maybe in some cases 50 miles an hour faster on the same tracks where stock cars compete. We're 50 mile an hour faster than these guys. And when you sit there in the stands, and if you've seen a stock car race at Richmond, and suddenly you see an Indy car come flying past you at 170 miles an hour, you were convinced in a hurry just how fast can be on a three-quarter mile racetrack. And there were people that were absolutely in awe of our race cars. And I think we've seen the attendance figures this year reflect a real change in the attitude towards the series. And I think it bodes very well for the future of the Indy Racing League.
I love the quote, and I'm not sure who said it now, but it was a quote, "Yeah, Richmond wasn't bad. Bring on Bristol."
Yeah. You know, Richmond, too, is also a an asphalt three-quarter mile oval, like you said, with a dog leg. It's three-quarter mile, and it's 14, 15-degree banking. You know, Bristol is a half mile that's paved with concrete. It's 35-degree banking. It's literally like driving around your coffee cup or a saucer. So, I don't know, Craig. I don't know if I would tempt fate and put our cars on a track like Bristol. It would be exciting, but it could be dangerous.
Yeah, but, let's focus in on the racing. Now, Sam Hornish Jr., he got away to a flyer winning the first three races, as we've talked about on the show previously, but then that's all sort of changed with Buddy Lazier mid-season, really getting on a huge roll, winning in his home track at Colorado, and then the previous two starts in front of sellout crowds, which goes back to one of the things that we were talking about, how the crowds have been coming, and it's been tough for the IRL to go into a NASCAR super stadium, which it can sit, 200,000, 300,000 people. They get 50,000, 60,000 people there, and the place looks empty, but you've gone the last two races to new tracks that have got facilities for 75 and I think it was 55,000 people, sell out, and the atmosphere, even not the atmosphere so much on radio, but the atmosphere on television, when you see sell out seats, it does mean you go, oh, this is a big show. But when you see a 200,000 stadium with 50,000, 60,000 people in it, you go, oh, there's no one there.
Yeah, Texas is the Texas Motor Speedway is the second largest sports venue in this country behind the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. The Indianapolis Motor Speedway, of course, seats in excess of 300,000 people, and Texas Motor Speedway seats, I believe it's 180,000. And like you said, we had a crowd in Texas a couple of years ago at almost 85,000. But the problem is, that's a super crowd. That's a great crowd. But as you mentioned, when you have 180,000 seats and you have 85,000 people there, you have more empty seats than you have full seats. And the perception is that no one is there. Well, a crowd of 85,000 is a great crowd. And you're exactly right. When you go into some of these venues that are so huge, it's a shame that they make the crowd look so puny, when in fact it's a very healthy crowd. As you mentioned, Kansas Speedway, which is one of the new tracks that we ran on this year, seats 75,000. We had a sold-out crowd there, and 75,000 people in a 75,000-seat arena looks like a ton of people. And, to be able to roll into a city and to a new track like that and for people not to be able to walk up and buy tickets the day of the race, it says something very positive about the race fans in that area and about the series. The same with Nashville Super Speedway, another great track. It was a concrete track as well, and once again, it was sold out. We're going to be looking at a situation this weekend at Kentucky Speedway on Sunday, where they've already sold advance tickets. It seats somewhere around 65,000. They've already sold advance tickets of some 45,000 to 50,000, and they're expecting it to be close to full with the walk up, and we've gotten a real break. The weather here has just been unbearably hot and humid for the last week or so, but we've got a cold front that's coming through tonight, and it's supposed to go through Kentucky tomorrow, and we're supposed to see racing temperatures this weekend in the upper 70s and low 80s with very low humidity. So it's going to be a beautiful race weekend, so we're looking for a great crowd.
Happy Father's Day to Buddy Lazier as he takes the checkers at the Radisson Indy 200. Colorado's Buddy Lazier has won again as he continues his now what appears to be momentum-building run in the Indy Racing Northern Lights Series. A winner at Pikes Peak, a winner at Richmond. Mikey's coming out to get another one. For the third time in the last four events, Buddy Lazier will see the checkered flags as he wins the Harrah's Indy 200.
I will say this, Buddy Lazier is putting on an absolute clinic right now. Buddy, as you mentioned, he won at his home track, which is Colorado Pikes Peak International Raceway. He won at Richmond, and he also won just a few weeks ago at Kansas. But Craig, you know, he also posted a top five at Texas Motor Speedway after the Indianapolis 500, and he also posted a top five at I think he was fourth at geez, now I've lost track. Where's the other race that we've run since the Indianapolis Motor Speedway? We've run five events, and I can't remember which one that Buddy finished fourth in.
You went to Kentucky, and
no, we haven't been to Kentucky yet. We go to Kentucky this weekend.
Kansas City and Nashville.
Kansas City was the other track. Kansas City was the track where Buddy finished. I believe it was fourth, and he finished fifth at Texas, I believe. And then he won at Colorado, he won at Richmond, and he won at Nashville. So he's just been on a roll. But, you know, Sam Hornish Jr., on the flip side of the coin, even though Sam hasn't won since the second race at Homestead, you know, you got to give a young guy like Sam credit. You know, here he finishes second at Colorado. I believe he finished second at Richmond, and he finished second at Kansas. So, you know, he's hung right in there. And to have five top twos this season, I think, is a real testament to the way he can drive that race car. But he's a little bit paranoid about having Buddy sneaking up on him, and I can understand that because Buddy is one of those cool, calculated sort of guys that kind of closes in for the kill, and you see him coming, but there's nothing you can do about it. And he's the defending race winner at Kentucky this weekend, so he's going to be tough to beat.
Mm. Now, of course, we talked earlier about the brash, fiery personalities that you have in the IRL with Cheever, Foyt, Salazar, and, of course, in Australia, everyone knows Eliseo Salazar. He beat up Nelson Piquet in Germany. You know, he's got a great track record over here. But then you talk about Sam Hornish, Scott Sharp, Davey Hamilton, you can include
Greg Ray.
And they've got the typical NASCAR sponsorship IRL image of nice guy, and of course you've got Sarah Fisher, who started off the year, you know, like fantastic, but has had some trouble since Indy getting everything together. But once again, just such a good mix when it's all happening. You have that wrestling formula where there's people to cheer at, people to boo at.
Yeah, and you know, in Sarah's situation, I saw Sarah yesterday in Cincinnati. And we were doing some promotion for this weekend's race. We were doing a media stopover there, and you know, Sarah is, you know, she's only 20 years old, and she has endured three big crashes this year, and I think that it's a real question right now of her simply regaining her confidence. She was almost caught up in that big 10-car crash in Atlanta. She barely avoided that. A piece of debris destroyed, I think it was a suspension piece on the right front. She had that big, hard, high-speed crash at the Speedway that involved Scott Goodyear in Turn 2. And then she was right behind Davey Hamilton when he crashed, and of course Davey's accident was all precipitated by a blown engine on Jarrett Schrader's car. He spun, but Davey hit the wall, and when he did, it sheared the right front wheel off of his car, and it came back and it hit Sarah Fisher's car. And if you watch the in-car camera of Sarah's view of that incident, that tire came very close to the cockpit of her car. And so, and then she also crashed after starting on the outside of the front row. She also crashed at Richmond. You know, it's one of those situations where I think her confidence was tested. Certainly it shook her up a little bit, and she's trying to get it back. They just hired a new program manager at Walker Racing, a gentleman named Tim Bumps, who is very good, worked with Derek at Penske Racing many years ago. And I think Tim Bumps will do a lot to restore that confidence that Sarah needs to have in herself. And Tim Bumps, I think, could play a big role in turning their season around. Sarah told me yesterday when we were talking, she goes, we have got to finish. in the top 10 in points, and I have got to be competitive in these final four races. And she realizes that, and there's a little bit of pressure on her. For being a 20-year-old, essentially a 20-year-old kid, she knows that she's got to perform to keep those sponsorship dollars coming in. And these final four races, I think, are going to be very, very important for her.
Mm. They're important for a lot of people. Of course, the Bell Terra Indy 300 at Sparta, Kentucky, but I take it that Cincinnati, Ohio, is the major metropolitan center that it's near.
Yeah, it's almost the same distance from Louisville, Kentucky, as it is from Cincinnati, but they seem to market more towards Cincinnati than they do Louisville. Even though you've got two fairly good-sized metropolitan areas, it appears that they market more towards Cincinnati than they do Louisville.
Mm. Well, Mike, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you once again. We appreciate you taking the time tonight to have a chat with us here at Inside Motorsport. And, those last four races of the season just can't come along soon enough. And, of course, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network bringing all that coverage right around the world via the World Wide Web. And we're thrilled to be part of it with you each and every time you go racing.
Hey, it's always great to talk to you, and we look forward to bringing you the final four races on the Indy Racing League schedule, and of course the SAP United States Grand Prix. We're thinking this year, Craig, that we are going to get an opportunity to put that event on the internet. Last year, we were not allowed to by Formula One management because of some agreements they already had in place, but we believe this year we are going to be able to have that event, or at least we are hoping that we're going to be able to have that event on the internet available to our listeners around the world, and we look forward to talking to you at the end of the season.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of SSFM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.